Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
You are a human animal. You are a very special breed. Or you are the only animal who can think, who can reason, who can read.
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. Today I have the pleasure of talking to Wallace Shawn, the author, most recently, of a book of essays published by Haymarket Press. And as I was reading these essays, I was gathering some of Wallace Shawn's plays together, among them The Designated Mourner and Marie and Bruce and Aunt Anne and Lemon. I had seen him perform The Fever at one time. I blundered into the fact that he's written a very recent play, so recent that while it's been performed in London, it hasn't been publicly performed in America, called Grasses of a Thousand Colors. It's published by the Theater Communications Group. And when I read it, I fell in love with it. And I thought, well, we don't often talk about plays or essays on Bookworm, but what a pleasure it would be to talk about this particular play, Grasses of a Thousand Colors, especially in relation to some of the essays. He writes essays about reality and about theater, which he refers to as the dream world. And this play is very much, it seems to me, a dream play, yes?
Yes, this play is proceeding by laws of logic that are not the normal ones in the play. It has, I'm afraid, the logic of dreams, although I'm not sure I remember my own dreams well enough to really compare. That could be simply a useful cliche, a way of saying that the logic doesn't follow the logic that we use in daily life. And yes, it is either a dream or it is mythological.
Well, in the essays, you make a distinction between the dreams we have when we're awake and the dreams we have when we're asleep. And often as not, when you're writing, you speak of reading, especially of a favorite pile, a swamp of comic books that was in your bedroom, as being somewhere between napping and reading. And I think that's the space of the play. It's somewhere between dreaming and the waking dream of being in a theater.
It is an act of bizarre arrogance on my part, because I determined at a certain point — it did take me about 10 years to write the play — at a certain point I did determine that this story should be told. And I wasn't sure how to defend that or how to tell anyone why it should be told. It's not based on daily events, and it has a lot of animals in it. And I felt I have the right to tell this, and it's even very important, but if anybody asks me why, I can't answer them.
Well, you see, one of the things that I'm convinced of is that there is in the imagination a crossing point which, once crossed, you no longer know whether you're awake or asleep. And in this play, grasses of a thousand colors, we don't expect a fairy tale to enter the picture. We're with a man who's telling the story of his life. As he tells it, we seem to know this kind of story, the story of a very angry man on keeping himself under control through certain kinds of arrogance and cruelty. He's reading his memoirs to a group, presumably of his friends. He says that he knows they don't like him, that he's going to read to them anyway, that even though they know about his youth, he's going to put them through that. And once and twice, he throws away his sheaf of papers and enters a different realm of storytelling. And I think this, for an audience, brings us to that state I'm talking about of having uncertainty crisscrossed twice, and now suddenly he's talking about going to a park and finding the moonlight there and riding ponies, which we will learn eventually are of various pastel shades, to a castle. And inside the castle, there are a table of cats having a kind of party, all wearing, I think, green ribbons. But then there's a white cat wearing a red ribbon, a special white cat, and we start to think, what? Where are we? And as this reality gets traversed by fantasy, it doubles back again and again because it seems as if the women in this man's life have also relations to the white cat, relations that are quite, as they first present themselves to us, mysterious and muddled. And I think even between the first and second act of this three-act play, our brains short-circuit, and we enter a realm that can't easily be called ordinary theatrical space. I'm giving you my experience as a reader, Wally. What have you to say?
Well, I couldn't be more thrilled by what you say. I mean, it is either you give yourself to it, as you have, and you say, for some reason, I want to follow this. But the thing is, the world is so much more extreme and grotesque than the play. Things go on that can hardly be imagined, even on the front page of the daily newspaper. You know, a bunch of rich people send an incredibly expensive airplane to blow up a bunch of incredibly poor people in a mud hut. It's so fantastic, you can't believe it's real. So it's not that far out there for writers to say, well, I want to just give the world my best, and I'm going to open myself up and write the thing that I would really like to go and see and that I really find interesting. And, you know, let's see if anybody else feels the way I do.
Well, what interested me so much was that this speaker, he's once called Ben, so I suppose we'll call him Ben, is a wealthy man, Now in his mid-60s, he began as a doctor. He formed a group of doctors fresh out of school, and he became interested in social problems, as we hope many people do, particularly the problem of hunger. But he's a man who degrades everything he touches. And so in his hands, it seems to me, even the imagination degrades itself. So this is a story about the return of the repressed, in which a man who has found a way to solve world hunger by turning animals into cannibals of their own species, leaving more food for humans. Now, in mysterious ways, the whole world of the imagination and of the animal realm is going to turn on him, essentially. And the world of fairy tales, in the course of it, becomes pornographic and eventually quite punishing. And we're watching what happens when the finest and most beautiful ideas in the world, of story, of generosity, mistreated, extract their own mysterious revenge.
Yeah, it is certainly about human beings and nature, but by the end, the distinction is in a way rejected as absurd. And he is he who had thought that he was doing something quintessentially human and wonderful is basically defeated by the environment, by nature.
I'm talking with Wallace Shawn, author most recently of Essays from Haymarket Books and of the play Grasses of a Thousand Colors, published by Theater Communications Group. I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. We'll continue after this short break. I'm Michael Silverblatt, this is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Wallace Shawn about his book of essays and his new play, Grasses of a Thousand Colors. Now, so many ways to approach this, but what an audience would see on the stage is a man talking sometimes directly to them, a screen on which one of the three women in his life appears periodically in different conditions of health. And eventually, all three of the women who've been in his life, although we're talking about moonlit parks and talking and very sexual white cats, what we see are four human beings, and they're evoking things that we're asked to imagine that cause the imagination, in a sense, to blank out because these things are unimaginable. Well, to begin with, the story of the white cat is acknowledged to have come from classical French fairy tales of the age of Perrault. Tell us about the white cat.
Well, there is a fairy tale that I loved as a child. And it actually, in a way, is a little bit... there's a political angle to it that's interesting because there's a young prince who goes looking for a little dog that his father wants him to find. I'm leaving out 50 pages of the story. And he comes to a castle and he finds that it's presided over by a white cat. And he is brought to a table where there are many, many cats. And they offer him mice for dinner. He says, I just can't eat mice. And they say, well, we'll make you something else that is more your type of thing. Now, in the play, he actually eats the mice, and that's quite important in what happens next. But in the original story, what happens that's very interesting, politically you could say, is that he totally forgets his mission. He forgets why he has come to the castle. He simply doesn't remember his own quote-unquote life because he's too involved in the life of the cats. It's too delightful. I suppose all my life I've had a lot of interest in the topic of sensuality and always was very drawn to the tales of the Heian court in Japan, where the tale of Genji takes place in the Pillow Book. And I suppose I'm quite preoccupied with the question of whether if people got more interested in this cat-like life, whether they would stop being so interested in achieving supremacy over each other.
And, you know, so often we're told by poets that this world, which could be so beautiful, has turned instead to a veil of woe, you know, of punishment and of sorrow. And this happens in this play as a feature, among other things, of age, of autocratic behavior, aristocratic behavior, the inability to see that what's good for one is not good for another. And it's like watching what has been a memoir turned fairy tale, turned parable, turned into a kind of living nightmare of what happens to the soul when it doesn't know how to live in anything like peace or harmony.
Well, there's a narcissism in the main character that leads him into a spiral of destruction of some kind. But there are an awful lot of instances of unconditional love and what you might call generativity or generousness that for no simple reason seem to appear. He's going to be destroyed, but then somehow he is saved repeatedly. And the planet, well, we don't know what's going to happen. But there are a lot of different forces at work.
Yes. In fact, we come gradually to know that this mysterious play, Grasses of a Thousand Colors, by my guest Wallace Shawn, which is published by Theater Communications Group, we come gradually to know that this play takes place in a future. And we watch as not only do we enter a fairy tale world, but a kind of science fictional nightmare world, moving one to the other. What I say is that, you know, in the essays, Wallace Shawn talks about writing about sex, and I believe that he's been writing about sexual fantasy, and that for the first time he's combined sexual fantasy with the fantasy of fairy tales and produced what is for me not really even a dream play, but a brand new genre of play that takes us on a journey that's both pleasant and very unpleasant at the same time. In the past, they've been mostly unpleasant journeys. But this one, you know, is offering us cakes and ale.
Yeah. Well, this definitely has very joyful possibilities in it.
And yet, the characters turn out, as we come to know them, to have been dead many times, and they find themselves condemned to repeating their stories, both in life and in storytelling.
Well, cats obviously do have more than one life, and so that's in the play.
It does seem that one of the hardest things to figure out for a writer here is how much and how directly to reveal. So part of the effect of reading the play for the first time, I would say for the second time as well, and even for the third time, is how compact and impacted together these revelations are. Revelation within revelation, so that you are being, like sleight of hand, misdirected. You don't know how much you've been told at any given time.
Well, theater traditionally is supposed to be understood the first time. You see it once, and if you don't get it, that's the author's fault as a writer. And somehow I just have decided not to accept that. There are definitely things you can't get the first time you see the play or read it. And, you know, it's obviously in – I mean, Mark Strand, when he's interviewed, says that he thinks people should read a poem dozens of times. You know, that's outrageous in a way, but I do think my play is rather enjoyable the second time around, you know, that's me talking. It's outrageous, but I did not make sure that everything in it could be understood the first time around.
Now, I'm curious. You do interview Mark Strand in the Book of Essays, and you profess to find it outrageous that we might read a poem dozens or even hundreds of times. But why do you find that outrageous? Are you pretending?
Well, that's what Mark says. He says, what's outrageous about it? I think as an American, I have the assumption in the back of my head that artistic things are a diversion, rather superficially amusing form of escaping from our daily cares. I mean, I personally don't feel that. I feel the opposite. But I am an American, and so it's ingrained in me to be a bit apologetic about because this is art for art's sake. I mean, this is not a play that aims for commercial success.
But isn't it also art for our sake?
Well, I believe in it. I mean, I feel that this story is telling us something that that is that we need to know.
It opened in London just in the last 6 months. Are there plans yet for an American production?
Well, I hope we will do it in America. Yes, the same production, which was directed by Andre Gregory, and I played the man, and Miranda Richardson and Emily McDonald and Jennifer Tilly were the three women.
I've been speaking with Wallace Shawn, author most recently of a collection, Essays, from Haymarket Books, and of a play, Grasses of a Thousand Colors, published by Theater Communications Group. Thank you, Wally, for joining me.
Thank you so much. Such a thrill.
You can comment on today's show or read excerpts from Essays at kcrw.com/bookworm. You can podcast this program, share it with a friend, or embed it on your blog with the click of a button on our new media player at kcrw.com. My co-producer is Melinda Siegel. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
Books. Books can be funny, too. Books make you laugh and sing. Books tell you everything. They're your treasured friends in prose and rhyme. Now it's Book of the Mouse Club time. To the jungles you can go in books.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcast the most recent ones from our website. Go to kcrw.com/bookworm. Plus, copies are available. For ordering information, call 310-450-5183.
Books tell you everything. They're your treasured friends in prose and rhyme. Now it's Book of the Mouse Club.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.